Support for WMNF comes from our members in the new Q2 Wi-Fi radio. The portable Wi-Fi radio cube allows one to listen to WMNF anytime, anywhere in the home, at the office, or around the world via Wi-Fi. For more information, go to Q2Radio.com. Do you need a tax break? Make a donation of your old form of transportation, car, boat, or motorcycle to WMNF. You can get that tax break you've been looking for. With the new year creeping around the corner, some of us need a tax write-off, and WMNF wants to help. Just call 1-888-966-3885 weekdays to set that up. That's 1-888-WMNF-885. I'm Duncan Strauss, and in a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Dr. Kenneth Shapiro and Dr. Nancy Bell, both affiliated with the Animals and Society Institute. And we'll be discussing the Institute's Anicare program, a psychological assessment and treatment approach for juveniles and adults who abuse animals. First, though, an animal tune of sorts. This is J.D. McPherson with Firebug here on Talking Animals. That was J.D. McPherson with an animal tune of sorts called Firebug. Our guests today are Dr. Kenneth Shapiro, co-founder and executive director of the Animals and Society Institute. In that capacity, Dr. Shapiro directs the Institute's Anicare program, a psychological assessment and treatment approach for juveniles and adults who abuse animals. He's speaking with us by phone from Maryland today. And joining us in studio is Dr. Nancy Bell, a psychologist, teacher, and writer who has conducted training in the Anicare approach, as she'll be doing in Tampa this Friday, December 7th, at the Family Justice Center of Hillsborough County. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Dr. Kenneth Shapiro and Dr. Nancy Bell to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Shapiro.
Good morning, sir.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Bell.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
All right. One by phone, one in person, and that's the way we like it. So anyways, Dr. Shapiro, let's start with you. Maybe if you could just talk a bit about the Animals and Society Institute, a bit about its history and mission.
Sure. Animals and Society Institute and its predecessor organization began in 1981. We have two primary areas of interest. One is the link, the relationship relationship between human violence and animal abuse, and that's what we're here, I guess, to talk about today. We have developed a treatment approach, a psychological intervention for dealing with folks who abuse animals and trying to help them with that problem. So we educate counselors across the country in how to use this approach called Anicare, animal care. The other area of interest for ASI, which is really a think tank, probably best describes it, is the development of the field of human-animal studies. You could think of this as comparable to women's studies for the feminist movement. So for the animal advocacy movement, we're developing this field, which studies human-animal relationships in all different contexts, historically, in literature, in philosophy, in the law, and so forth. So we develop journals and book series and a fellowship for students, and we provide networking for folks to develop courses in human-animal studies. Those can occur in many different fields, law, history, psychology, anthropology, literary criticism, and so forth.
And
that's who we are.
Okay, and just to follow up quickly on the think tank side of things, how many thinkers are affiliated with this tank, Dr. Shapiro?
How many thinkers? That's a good question. I'm not sure I can answer that very
well. In other words, are there positions more kind of formally connected with the Institute, or is it sort of more informally and sort of rotating depending on what's
It's some of both. For example, mm-hmm. we have two journals. Each journal has 30 to 40 editors, and then there's, of course, over the years, hundreds of people who have published in the journals.
Sure.
Similarly with the book series, we've given the workshop on Anicare to 700 or 800 people over the years. So those are all people who are affiliated with the think tank in some way or other.
Okay. And I take it one other point, though, that I just want to draw on, because I think it's always important to get people involved in this early. So it sounded like from what you were saying in the initial description there that there's sort of at least some kind of link to one or more colleges or universities, either in terms of an official academic program in
Yes. Yeah, we have a partnership with Wesleyan University mm-hmm. to provide a 6-week residence summer fellowship for students and scholars interested in human-animal studies. We have a partnership with Arizona State University to present an online course on Anicare.
That sounds great. And, of course, there's more and more schools, Drury and others, that are providing
yep.
undergraduate majors, and of course we've had Bob Bark on the show a few times, and he's
yep.
obviously funded a lot of law school programs in some of the same
right.
sort of areas.
Right.
So, okay, so let's get to kind of more what the real focus of today's conversation is, which is the Anicare approach. So, Dr. Bell and or Dr. Shapiro, maybe you could kind of give us an overview of that approach before we get into some specifics.
Sure, you want me to take that, Nancy?
Sure, go ahead, Ken.
Okay. Hey, nice to talk to you, Nancy, if indirectly. So,
you
yeah,
too.
Anicare is a psychological intervention and assessment. So it's used to identify and try to understand folks who have abused animals, both children and adults. And we assess them, and then we refer them sometimes for the Anicare treatment itself, sometimes if they have lesser problems to other kinds of interventions that are just educational. If they have greater problems, we might refer them to a residential treatment program. But many of them go on to do Anicare, which is a cognitive behavioral approach. It focuses on the immediate target behavior of reducing or eliminating animal abuse. We look at the person's ability to empathize with other people and with animals. We look at self-management skills, how to deal with problems without being violent. We look at attachment, what kind of relationships they form both with humans and animals. Most of the cases that we get are court-ordered, particularly the adults. For the children, we get them from various sources, the juvenile courts, but also from teachers and guidance counselors and pediatricians and so forth. So it's a brief psychological intervention. It might be of interest for your listeners to know that now 30 states out of the 50 states allow the judge to require counseling for a convicted animal abuser. We now have 23 cases in 12 states where the judge has stipulated Anacare as part of the sentence.
And I find that very interesting because it sounds like more and more of those states, and at least in the Justice Department, have recognized the Anacare program, and that's really sort of the go-to solution, as it were, in these kinds of cases. I mean, I know, let me ask a parallel question. Is there an alternative approach to Anacare that is also employed with any kind of near that same sort of a frequency?
Not really. There is not. No, mm-hmm. There is no other published, devoted treatment. Other therapies, of course, can deal with this problem because it's not that different from dealing with a perpetrator of domestic violence, hence the relationship between human violence and animal abuse. But this is the only devoted treatment.
Sure. And so when a judge does say, hey, this is what's called for in this case, at least in those 30 states, that's what they mean, is that then that person is going to go into an Anacare sort of approach or treatment.
Yeah, most typically, there are some states where we haven't gotten around to informing folks well enough, and sometimes they'll fall back onto some sort of generic anger management intervention, which mm-hmm. is helpful, but really doesn't get at many or most of the cases.
Sure. Let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Dr. Kenneth Shapiro and Dr. Nancy Bell about the Anacare approach to assessing and treating those who abuse animals. If you'd like to ask them a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So for either one of you, again, is there a way, now that this is obviously taking hold and more states seem to be adding that as part of the probable solution or sentencing even in these kind of cases, is there a way to sort of quantify what sort of results you guys have started to experience with the Anacare approach?
Again, Ken, I think that's one you can answer.
Okay. It's a great question, and it's very important that therapy approaches be evidence-based. And Anacare, both adult and child, only at this time have indirect validity. That is, we have borrowed interventions from other contexts, childhood misbehavior of other kinds, domestic violence perpetrators, and we've adapted those validated treatment approaches to the animal abuse context. So we have only indirect validation. We also, however, are in the midst of a validation study funded by the Scott Foundation in Ohio, where we're actually gathering data from therapists who have used Anacare Child and have done follow-ups with their clients and given them various measures like the change in empathy, the change in attitudes towards animals, the change in level of acceptability of aggression, stuff like that. So mm-hmm. we hope to publish a validation study shortly. The only other sort of indirect evidence we have is that we've given about 65 of these workshops in addition to the one we're giving in a couple of days in Tampa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just generally received with all kinds of nods and confirmations from the therapists who attend those workshops. And they're people in the know in the sense that they work with perpetrators of other kinds, they do child therapy and so forth. So it seems to be hitting a vein, and it seems to be confirmed in that way.
Sure. And I guess I should mention, we'll talk to Dr. Bell a little bit more about the training session that's going to be held this Friday in Tampa. But one thing I think is worth mentioning now, especially before we get into a few other specifics here about the Anticare program, is that it is intended for healthcare for professionals, but it's also open to lay people who might be interested in these issues and how it might pertain to their family, their lives, et cetera.
Right. There are a number of different groups that are very welcome to come and I think could all benefit. As we said, mental health counselors of all types, people who work, counselors and others who work with at-risk kids, domestic violence folks, social workers, judges, attorneys, law enforcement, teachers, anybody who deals with kids in the case of Anticare Child and with adults in the care of in case of Anticare, where people are abusing animals. And what we find so often, and I think you'll agree, Ken, in our workshops, is that the people who attend are really appreciative of having a more structured approach. Often they really don't know quite what to do with an animal abuser as far as a therapeutic approach. And Anticare and Anticare Child give a very structured therapeutic approach to dealing with animal abusers. But at the same time, it's very flexible. There are a lot of different ways to use it, and it's designed so that it can be tailored to particular groups and particular clients.
Well, with that in mind, let's get into a few kind of specifics. I mean, we kind of looked a little bit at just the overall approach and some of the sort of academic or a little bit of the initial research kind of implications. But what, like, Dr. Bell, since you'll be holding this training session and part of that obviously very much is the assessment, when assessing in the Anticare program, I mean, what are you looking for in particular at first?
Well, first you're looking to identify a child who either is suspected of abusing animals or an animal or who has already been verified as doing that. So you want to find these kids and as early as possible. And that's why Anticare Child was developed after the Anticare program for adults, because it was recognized that there really wasn't any approach that dealt with children who abuse animals specifically. And it's just critically important, and I know Ken will agree, to intervene just as early as you can. The earlier you intervene with a child who's abusing animals, the better. For instance, ages 2 to 7, because the research shows that by age 8, the antisocial behavior is very difficult to arrest and stop. So that's why the early intervention is so important and why dealing with kids is so important.
Well, let me ask then sort of a two-pronged question in response to that. What sort of qualities recur when identifying, kids, especially in that age group that seem to be at risk or already have been established as abusing animals? And related to that, what does the early intervention look like for a kid that has been identified?
Mm-hmm. You mean the qualities in a child who's abusing animals?
Yeah. What sort of traits? What are the things that say, hey, this is at least a red flag or beyond a red flag?
Right. Well, join me here on this one, Ken. But I would certainly say aggressiveness toward animals and toward people, poor impulse control. What more adults I would say would call anger management, behavioral disorders. There are tangential psychological issues that can be a red flag, such as anything like bedwetting, fire setting, sleep disturbances, all kinds of things that can occur when another problem happens to be animal abuse, and also coming from a family where violence is occurring in a domestic violence home situation, in a school or daycare situation where a child is very aggressive either to other children or to animals that may be there or may be brought in.
And so how, because there's a number of things that you said there, for example, bedwetting, fire starting, that, might bespeak other issues or may not bespeak the things that are called for within Anticare. So is that part of the very point, is that if they see someone early on, the idea is to identify
is animal abuse occurring
part of that?
Yeah, and the key we always say is the key concept in the assessment is to ask. If you don't ask, you probably won't find out. So ask the child about their experience with animals in the home, in a school setting, in a neighborhood setting, and also get information about their potential animal abuse from any other sources you can find, everything from caregivers, parents, guidance counselors, pediatricians, social workers, anybody who's worked with this child and can give more insight into what's really going on with them.
And in that, in those age ranges, are they less inclined to even know to or think to hide those kinds of behaviors? In other words, you know, if you're seven and you don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with, you know, being, you know, whatever you're doing to that dog or cat, is it usually pretty widely evident to the family, the parents, the caretaker, or is it something that's often done kind of more on the side because even then they kind of know that it's wrong, but they're proceeding
well,
anyway?
I think both situations occur. And as I said, very often animal abuse occurs in a domestically violent home. So it can be that the child is abusing animals, perhaps because he or she has seen an older sibling abusing animals or a parent abusing animals. So it's very common in domestic violence situations. So you really have to look at it kind of holistically mm-hmm. and see the whole picture rather than just focusing in on the child, because the child has learned this behavior somewhere, unless, and this I think is worth mentioning, very, very young children simply haven't learned yet how to treat animals appropriately. So it's very important to intervene very early. For instance, something as mild as maybe a child pulling a cat's tail. The child hasn't learned, if he's only 2 or 3 years old, that that's not the way to treat an animal kindly and humanely. So then it's up to the caregivers, to the parents, to the teachers, to model good behavior in treating animals well, and also teach the child how to do that, because kids don't come into the world automatically knowing how to be kind to animals and treat them appropriately.
Yeah, it sure sounds like there's, at least early on, there's a number of sort of blurry things, just like we talked about the bedwetting and the fire starting could be part of this, or it could be, you know, other issues that have nothing to
right.
do with abusing
exactly.
animals. And in
exactly.
the same way, a kid could grow up in a home where there's no animals, and so they're, one of their first exposures to an animal, or among their first ones, is maybe they are a bit rough, or they grab a tail just because they haven't learned
they don't
not
know
to
yet.
Do that,
yes,
but there may
exactly.
not be other
right.
issues. But
yeah.
So you have to, I guess, as part of your assessment, if you think there's something troubling going on, to really sort of clarify those mm-hmm. as early as
mm-hmm.
possible. And what happens if they're a little bit older? You said there's kind of an ideal age range to identify and you know, intervene on those kids. Once they get a little bit older than that, what is there a different course with an Anticare child or otherwise that is recommended? Or,
well, Anticare child is for, correct me if I'm wrong, Ken, but it's for juveniles under the age of 17.
Right.
And so Anticare, the adult version, kicks in after that, where they're considered adults.
And are there other sorts of things? I mean, obviously you said, you know, a violent household is a key thing. Are there other things, just generally family dynamics, SES level, other things that seem to portend more difficulties in this way, or?
Other than family dynamics?
Well, there must be an array, I would think, of things that you've started to see over the years that
right.
there have
been. Right. Well, school difficulties. Difficulties getting along with other kids.
How many of those things are cause and how many are effect, or is that kind of what's part of the tricky thing?
That's part of the tricky thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to mention, too, if I could, that
sure.
One thing we really pay attention to with Anticare child and urge counselors to adhere to is witnessing. It's very, very common for kids to witness animal abuse. And this can be really upsetting and traumatic and sometimes have some kind of long-lasting effects. If a child didn't perpetrate or participate in the abuse but witnessed severe animal abuse, that can be a real problem and cause them to have some real issues ongoing. So we really ask not only ask the child about their own experiences with animals, but about what they may have seen or witnessed in the past that has been really upsetting to them and concerning to them, because that can have a long-term effect too.
I would think. Yeah.
Yeah. I would just add to that that the witnessing is a research finding that's more recent than some of the others. And interestingly, the person who witnesses can go one or two routes. Some of them become abusers, having seen the use of violence as a way of dealing with problems. Having witnessed that, they mm-hmm. then pick that up as part of the way they deal with problems. Others of them are traumatized by the witnessing and develop post-traumatic stress syndrome kinds of symptoms. And there's also a gender difference in that literature. The male witnessers more likely become abusers, and uh-huh. the female witnessers more likely become traumatized.
Well, that's funny. I mean, it's not funny, but I was going to ask about just a different sort of gender thing, because it does seem to, at best, a layperson, meaning myself, that this does skew heavily male, kind of almost at each age. Is that an accurate view?
Yes, it's more male than female. In the adult area, that's definitely true. Mm-hmm. Also, except in the area of hoarding. Your listeners probably are familiar with what that is, but that is typically a middle-aged woman who, not always a woman, but more often, mm-hmm. Who has more animals than she can care for. But it's more than just a resource problem. Apparently, most of these people who end up hoarding really begin to distort the reality of the situation and become deniers and are very difficult to treat, and even when the law catches them, they typically go back to collecting or hoarding again. So that's a whole area of animal abuse that has somewhat different dynamics and different gender basis, and we don't really have a good treatment for that as yet.
But is that, to the extent it exists, does that still fall under the Anticare purview, or is it just it's so early and not there's not really a protocol developed for protocols?
The latter, really.
Yeah.
We're going to come out with a second edition of Anticare Adult in the spring or next fall, and we hope to incorporate at least what is known up to at that time about what is a good intervention. But as I say, it's a very, very difficult group to work with.
Sure.
I should add that Anticare Child is about to come out in its second edition, and we're putting it together in such a way that it's going to be more a self-educating package so that people who can't come to a workshop can buy this package. It will include the handbook, a demonstration DVD where we show some of the assessment and interventions in a role play context, and also a tape of a workshop, so that someone who is an experienced therapist, particularly one who has worked in a domestic violence area, can readily pick up this other piece of the problem, which is animal abuse.
Well, that's great. That'll really sort of widen out who can be helped by this. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. We're discussing the Anticare approach to assessing and treating those who abuse animals with Dr. Kenneth Shapiro and Dr. Nancy Bell. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. We just have probably a few minutes left. Also, Dr. Bell, along with another colleague, Dr. Maya Gupta, will be conducting a day-long training session in Anticare in Tampa this Friday, December 7th, at the Family Justice Center of Hillsborough County. So let's, at least in our remaining time, to at least start addressing the treatment, the exercises and things that once it's been identified, we talked a little bit about the assessing. So what can we do to help kids, juveniles, and adults? And I understand it'd be probably somewhat different things from each of those groups. But just generally, what are some of the things that are employed in the treatment side of this?
Well, the treatment stage of this, after we get through the assessment, has really three stages. The first would be connection, where the therapist or the professional develops a rapport with the child to try to gain their trust and get them to open up and talk about what they've experienced or what they've seen. And then the second one is expression, which has a lot to do with expressing feelings and emotional intelligence and getting the child to open up and talk about how they feel about what's happened. And then finally, the corrective interventions themselves. And in that area, what we try to do is, first of all, we try to teach some accountability for what happened. In other words, getting the child to the point through this therapeutic intervention where they say, or they acknowledge, maybe in not so many words, I did this. I'm responsible for having done this. That's very important. And then we also, I think in a very important way, we talk about teaching empathy and leading the child or the juvenile toward trying to understand how the animal might have felt as it was being abused. What do you think the animal felt? We kind of start with talking about human empathy, maybe empathizing with another person, and then we work up to the empathy for the animal that was being abused. In the treatment, we also talk about self-management and teach the juvenile problem-solving skills. You know, what was the problem that occurred to here, and how together can we work on developing problem-solving skills so that the next time something like this happens, you'll be better prepared to deal with it. So in the Anacare Child and the Anacare, but in the Anacare Child on Friday, we have a workbook. There are case studies. There are exercises. There are drawings. There sometimes in Anacare Child we use puppets or animal-assisted therapy. And all of these things give the therapists a lot of tools to use. There is a DVD. We have a PowerPoint presentation. There are just a lot of tools contained within this program to help therapists tailor their approach with individual juvenile animal abusers.
And let me ask you, this is, of course, for both of you, in your experience, I mean, to what extent can compassion and empathy be taught to kids, juveniles, and adults, I mean, where it's been identified as crucially lacking, so well after childhood when many of us are fortunate enough to learn those traits? I mean, what are the prospects for really teaching, you know, especially maybe an adult, but even any of these other mm-hmm. groups, mm-hmm. something that's, you know, clearly part of the very problem that's why they're
right.
in the Anacare thing. I mean,
Ken, hasn't there been some research on
yes,
teaching
yeah,
empathy
yeah,
that's very positive?
Right. Let me comment on that. I don't know how much time we have left. But,
yeah, we just have probably a couple minutes left total here.
Oh, that's
things.
Good. Fine.
Yeah.
So scientists in the last 10 or 15 years have discovered both in humans and animals what are called mirror neurons. And those are such that when I see someone have a particular emotional response, whether it's pain or joy, I myself, without really thinking about it, I feel it automatically in a hardwired way, have a similar kind of feeling. So I see someone step on your toe, and I say, I know what that's like. And it's not really, it's really an emotional response, and it's hardwired, and so that in a sense we have a social brain that almost from the very beginning puts us out there and leaves us sensitive to and vulnerable to the feelings of others. So the people who come in who have problems with empathy have unlearned it. They had it at the beginning, and it can be retaught. And another point I should make about this is that the socialization process teaches us what kinds of beings to empathize with. And kids often are taught not to empathize with the chicken on the table, but they're taught to empathize with the dog. So we have some work that we can do in terms of enlarging the universe of kinds of beings out there that we should empathize with, as well as teaching the skill itself. And we have a lot of different kinds of exercises that help us to do that. But as you suggest, the older the person, the more difficult it is to get them to start empathizing.
Sure, but even just what you did report, Dr. Shapiro, it does sound really encouraging that it can indeed, yeah, you can get there. So we're just about out of time, but Dr. Bell, I would like you, if you want to quickly highlight anything else about this Friday's training sessions to make sure people who might want to find out more about it, again, whether they're professionals in the field or lay people, they're certainly invited to the session, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely. Yeah. As we said, it's at the Family Justice Center of Hillsborough County, which many of you may know, is our kind of our one-stop shop for domestic violence survivors, families and kids who are involved in domestic violence situation. It's everything under one roof. It's in the Bush Boulevard area. And anyone who is interested in this workshop, which is very, very reasonably priced, if you go online to www.fjchc, Family Justice Center of Hillsborough County, fjchc.org, and then click on Training Academy, you can sign up right there. We still have room, and we would love to have you.
Well, that's great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Dr. Kenneth Shapiro and Dr. Nancy Bell about the Anticare approach, affiliated directly or indirectly, at least, with the Animals and Society Institute. The website for that is animalsandsociety.org. They're also on Facebook, just simply / Animals and Society Institute. Thank you very much for making the time, both of you, to join us today on Talking Animals, and we'll look forward to that training session on Friday.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting us, Duncan.
Absolutely.
Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. It's safe to say we typically do not feature other radio program in the Comedy Corner or anywhere else on the show for that matter, but I think this segment from the Y94 Morning Show in Fargo, North Dakota, with Zero Rat and Maggie, no less, proves to be a worthwhile exception. This was called to my attention on Facebook. I looked into the piece online, made a handful of edits, and have it for you today. So this is a caller named Donna with a piece I guess we can call Please Move the Deer Crossing Sign. On today's Comedy Corner, on Talking Animals.
Now, Donna, you got quite the vent today. It sounds like what's going on with you.
Well, I wanted to voice my opinion on something that's been bothering me for a really long time.
Okay.
I tried writing the newspaper and contacting TV stations, but nobody seems to want to help me with this. So that's why I'm calling you guys.
Okay, what's the issue?
Well, over the past few years, I've been involved in three separate car accidents involving deer, you know, with the population and everything. Each of these incidents, they've occurred shortly after I saw a deer crossing sign on the highway. Well, my frustration is that Minnesota and North Dakota Departments of Transportation would allow these deer crossings to be in such high traffic areas. I mean, I've even seen them on the interstate. Why are we encouraging deer to cross at the interstate? I don't get it. That's such a high traffic area. I mean,
you know,
I understand that deer are wild animals and they need to travel across the streets occasionally to survive. And now, of course, to find food, but it seems to me that so irresponsible of us to allow these deer crossings to be in areas where these deer are so likely to be struck by oncoming traffic. I mean, wouldn't you agree? You think they would put deer crossings maybe, you know, in, you know, smaller towns, maybe during at a school crossing. It would be a safer place for them to cross.
Wait.
You know, put the deer crossing sign.
You know, deer crossings aren't telling deer that it's safe to cross there. It's just more of like an alert for drivers so they know it's like a high deer population.
The government put the deer crossings there. They can direct the deer population anywhere they want to by moving that deer crossing sign. I mean, you know, why in the world would they place it on the highway or the interstate?
And it goes on like that. Totally real, legitimate call. Again, that was a caller named Donna with an edited piece for calling Please Move the Deer Crossing Sign. And, featured a while back on the Y94 Morning Radio Show in Fargo, North Dakota. So, I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. It's time now for the animal news. Towards the closer to the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will be sitting pretty for New Year's Eve with a pair of tickets to see the Bright Lights Social Hour. Indeed, December 31st at the Ritz. So right now, though, let's get into the talk, the animal news and announcements. look at items of interest, animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon, produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item is international ramifications. It's from AP with Dateline Johannesburg. The lions that roam Africa's savannas have lost as much as 75% of their habitat in the last 50 years as humans overtake their land and the lion population dwindles, said a study released Tuesday. Researchers at Duke University, including prominent conservationist Stuart Pym, warned that the number of lions across the continent have dropped to as few as 32,000, with populations in West Africa under incredible pressure. Lion numbers have declined precipitously in the last century, the study, published Tuesday by the journal Biodiversity and Conservation, reads. Given that many now live in small, isolated populations, this trend will continue. The situation in West Africa is particularly dire, with no large population remaining, and lions now absent from many of the region's national parks. A news item closer to home, Dateline Lakeland. Bruno is at the height of his career. He holds several national championship titles and helps catch bad guys, but his retirement plan was a little bleak. That is until now. Quote, little things in the department are now being looked at in different ways because the light's coming to the community about what we are facing out there as police officers, canine handlers, Lakeland Police Officer Ted Seeley said. Lakeland Police Department is teaming up with local veterinarians to provide free medical care for canines once they turn in their badges. I feel like our canine officers, once they retire, are veterans without benefits, and I feel like they deserve, and we want them to have some benefits for the service that they gave us. Owner of My Pets Animal Hospital, Donna McWilliams, said. Williams has opened the doors of her animal hospital to the dogs and so have several other facilities. That's great news for Officer Ted Seeley, who is Bruno's handler and the proud owner of a retired canine. And he goes on to say, they're like your family once you work those dogs. And I worked Bodo for 6 years. You just can't give them up. They're a part of your family. They become a child to you. And, of course, their care can get expensive. So kudos to them. Sounds great. Also, kind of locally, but yet a national story to some extent, too. SeaWorld defended itself this weekend from criticism from a family after a dolphin bit their 8-year-old daughter at the Orlando attraction. The video posted online shows the girl standing along the edge of a pool, one of several people feeding dolphins. After she picks up a paper plate that once held the marine mammal's food, a dolphin lunges at her and bites her hand. The dolphin let go after a few seconds, but not before leaving 3 puncture wounds on the girl's hand. In a statement, SeaWorld spokeswoman Becca Bidas said on site, quote, educators and animal care staff immediately connected with the family. In addition, a member of our health services team was in the area at Dolphin Cove and quickly responded and treated the young girl. Yet, in an interview with CNN Atlanta affiliate WFSB, the family at the center of the November 21st incident faulted the Central Florida attraction staff for not warning them that the dolphins might bite and for the response after the girl was injured. Things coming up locally in the coming days include the annual thrift store party, holiday-oriented party from the Animal Based Charities Incorporated. So that'll be this Friday, December 7th from 5 to 7 p.m. At their thrift shop. And for a nominal donation, you can get your pet's picture taken with Santa. And there's a mystery sale. You have to stop by to find out what it'll be this year. Raffles, food, punch, and you can bring a can of pet food for a free raffle ticket. So you can find out more about that by going to animalbasedcharities.org. Other events coming up that we'll get to in our subsequent editions of the Animal News and Events days. But also coming up this Saturday, it's the Pinellas Paws Cause holiday celebration from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Again, this Saturday, December 8th, there'll be photos with Santa. Santa Paws, unique pet-themed items, food trucks, vendors, rabies vaccination specials, adoption specials, animal rescue groups, music and entertainment, and more. So you can find out more, get involved directly if you'd like, by going to pinellascounty.org/animalservices, or if you'd like to call 727-582-2600. Tis the season for pet photos with Santa. It's also coming up a little further down the road. The Humane Society of Tampa Bay will also be offering pet photos with Santa. That's be Saturday, December 15th from 1 to 5 p.m. And jolly old St. Nick will be paying a visit to the animals there. He'll be at the gazebo. And we'd love to hear what's on your pet's Christmas list. So that's at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, 3607 North Armenia Avenue in Tampa. Again, you can find out more at humanesocietytampa.org. And a story I think that I reported on, at least briefly. This comes from over on my side of the state more, but I want to read briefly from the Palm Beach Post. Janet Green and her husband Craig have said the health of their treasured horses failed in a calamity that began with their unexpected eviction and was compounded by Tropical Storm Isaac. But the county's top animal investigator said that in the span of 2 months, one sick horse ended up becoming two dead horses and 13 sick ones, and they placed that blame squarely on Janet Green, the horse's owner of record. Last week, 3 weeks after her horses were confiscated from a Loxahatchee Grove's property, Green was charged with 13 counts of animal cruelty and one count of confining the animals without enough food. The animal cruelty charges are felonies. The remaining charge is a misdemeanor. So, I'm not sure if I mentioned this on the show. I know I posted on Facebook. My mother-in-law and son and I took some, when they first reported the story, they desperately needed food and other provisions for these horses that were just so emaciated. It was pretty shocking. So we took some food and stuff out there. And one other thing, if we have time a little bit before the end, maybe we'll come back to a few more of these things. But Razzoo.com, the fastest-growing crowdfunding platform for causes, surveyed more than 2,000 Americans and found that animals and their welfare rank in the top three when it comes to the top relatable charitable causes and are in turn more likely to donate to. Animals ranked in the top three along with child welfare causes and causes for specific diseases, but nearly half of Americans said they especially relate to animal causes. Makes sense to us here, doesn't it? All right, so let's... We have time, like I said, we'll come back, but I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win. There will be a prize, a pair of tickets to see the Bright Light Social Hour, New Year's Eve, no less, at the Ritz. To the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal song, to 813-239-9663. If you're trying to score plum tickets to see the Bright Light Social Hour, you really should know this song. It's named an animal tune. I'm talking animals.
We move the bones to lay the stones, and now we're free. We watch it grow, let everyone know that our city complete. We move our bones to lay the stones, and now we're free. We watched it grow, let everyone know that our city is complete.
If people can name an animal tune, we'll take their calls off the air. A couple of things that I want to let you know about, including that there's these folks that do an annual yard sale fundraiser, and each year they do it, the proceeds go to a different animal rescue or organization. So this time, all proceeds will go to Wildlife Haven Rehab in Odessa. And that's a 501c3 rescue and rehab for sick and injured Florida wildlife. So that's a good cause. You can check them out at wildlifehavenrehab.org. And the date of the sale, it's about a little over a month away. It's January 12th from 6 a.m. to 5 p.m. and will be held at the Sunoco Tampa offices located at 203 South Falkenberg Road in Brandon. Not far from the, down the street really, from the Hillsborough County Animal Services. So, but they are collecting items now to offer at that yard sale. So if you would like to, offer some things that would be for this, worthy cause, you can just send an email to Octane Tailor Made. Octane Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, made at tampa.rr.com. Or you can call 813-839-3474 to make arrangements to drop off items. Or they, I'm sure in some cases, might be willing to collect them from you. So, let's see. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Are you calling to name that animal, too?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, cool. Go ahead.
Piedra de la Iguana.
Wow, very good. Do you have any kind of translation?
It's not the mouth of the iguana. It's the...
Like the stone of the iguana?
Stone?
Or the iguana stone?
Stone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, so to me, that kind of loosely qualifies in our world as an animal tune. So,
yeah.
So cool. So what is your name?
It's Amy Friedman.
Oh, hey, Amy Friedman. Cool. Okay, well, we will come back and get your information when we can and get you all set up to go see Bright Lights Social Hour on New Year's Eve at the Ritz.
Yeah, you can just ask Gene. I'm pretty much hooked up there.
Okay, cool. Obviously, yeah. Okay,
Amy
great.
Friedman. Okay.
Okay,
so
thanks. Congratulations.
It will be will call or send a...
Yeah, it will be will call. Yeah,
cool.
We'll let you know if there's anything different, but that's my expectation.
All right, well, call me or send me an email.
Okay. All right, we're on the air, so let's not...
Thanks,
okay,
bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, good for Amy, and it's going to be a fun show. Great way to ring in the new year, obviously. So, anyway, all right. So we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals, and we'll be back next Wednesday, December 12th, when our guest will be Brian McRory, veteran journalist with the Boston Globe and author most recently of Buddy, How a Rooster Made Me a Family Man. I hope you'll join us next Wednesday for that. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals Broadcast Outreach Consultant is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Stay tuned for the wonderful Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next, noon to 3. We're closing out today's show with an animal song from the vaults. This is the New York Dolls with Dance Like a Monkey, taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwachi, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks. Take care. Shake your New York Dolls, Dance Like a Monkey. It's 88.5 FM, WMNF Tampa. Thanks one more time to Dr. Kenneth Shapiro and Dr. Nancy Bell. An illuminating conversation on an extremely important topic, obviously. Again, you can find out more by going to animalsinsociety.org, and specific old page and tab is devoted to the Anticare program. So we'll be back next Wednesday at 11 a.m. with another edition of Talking Animals. Much more immediately. Of course, coming up is the All Souls edition of It's the Music, another great show on tap, I'm sure, from the lovely and talented Scott Elliott. So stay tuned for that. That'll be coming up right after the NPR News, which will be coming to you momentarily. And we'll catch up next Wednesday on Talking Animals. Have a great day. Stay tuned for the NPR News.
From NPR News.